Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to the TT Podcast. This week, we're going to be dissecting Milan San Remo and how Jasper Stuyven stunned the big guns. I am, as always, joined by my co-host, Tom. Tom, be honest, how much of San Remo did you watch live?
I did have to dip in and out of it because I had things to do on Saturday morning, which was actually go and search for some beers from Granada that you know very well, and I didn't find them, so it was very disappointing. So I did manage to time all of that so that I really got back into the house as they were coming off the descent of the Poggio. So caught the only exciting bit of the race.
So you didn't miss much at all then?
No. The first 285K, just not really necessary.
See, I'm the same as you. I watched when the coverage started, I was up watching it. I thought whoever did that, the commentary, I think it was Rob Hatch, was on the commentary on the graveyard shift there. Absolutely nothing happening. Then obviously they progress through, the breakaway goes away for 200 kilometers. Nothing happens. You've got 200 kilometers of just quite stunning Italian coastline, but it's, you know, not too interesting. Then I went away, had a nice picnic with my brother and sister in the park, and came back, managed to get back in time to catch the last 20K.
Yeah, perfect. Set that up nicely. And even then, look, it's a great race. And as a rider, I can see why it's taken as serious as it is, because that distance, even if it was pan flat, is difficult. They must have done record-breaking pace, because I know it was cross tailwind all the way. No echelons, though. Even so, the last 15K I thought were a bit of an anticlimax.
Massively so. I mean, it's no surprise really that the longest race in the calendar is the most boring. And if I were to come on here with my agenda, as I sometimes do, I'd be pushing for San Remo being booted from monument status and getting Strada Bianchi in there. But that's a debate for another time. You were saying it was a bit of an anticlimax. Why did you feel it was an anticlimax, Tom?
Because Philippe Gilbert didn't have the legs and was nowhere near. So that was, you know, the main attraction of the race gone. But also, I was expecting a big bunch sprint, at least, you know, at the end of something like that. The least they can give you is 10 men, you know, all dipping across the line. And that didn't happen. Stuyven stole away. I mean, brilliant for him. A great move. And I know he said he did it all on instinct, but just managed to hold off the group to the line.
This is the thing. I don't think it's that surprising, really. I mean, once they're on the Poggio is where the attacks are going to come. And it's where we saw the first attack from Julian Alaphilippe. And obviously, yeah, of course. But when they've got 270 kilometers in their legs, 280 kilometers in their legs, Julian Alaphilippe's, you know, trademark kick isn't as powerful and explosive as it usually is. And this is why you have riders like Caleb Ewan able to follow attacks uphill against riders like, well, Van der Poel, Alaphilippe, Wout van Aert, because they just don't have the power to stay away. And this is why at the end, we had a much bigger group than we needed, really, for an interesting finale.
Yeah, but I would then go on to say that the reverse is true as well. As much as Alaphilippe and Van der Poel were maybe neutralised going uphill, Ewan also didn't quite have the legs on the flat at the end to, maybe the group didn't chase as much because Ewan was there, but and I know he did win out of the bunch, but for him to be in that position and then not catch Stuyven really shocked me, because I don't think he'll get an opportunity as good as that to win a race of that calibre or that particular race again. He won't win it, but that surely 1K out from there, you've got to fancy him.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know what Lotto's tactics were going into it and how much they obviously evolved out on the road. I don't know whether they would have gone in riding for Gilbert or whether they thought Caleb's got a chance here, or whether just at the end Caleb realised he was brushing shoulders with Van Aert and Alaphilippe and they thought, well, we'll ride for you now.
Don't know. Hard to say. I mean, riding for one doesn't necessarily mean not riding for the other as well. I'm sure they could have worked a way. The tactic for San Remo's basically the same, isn't it? Get to the Poggio and attack, or try and get over the top and win the bunch. There's not really anything else you can do, so it's more or less just a game of hanging on until the top of the Poggio.
Which is what I thought was particularly surprising, the way that Stuyven won, because it wasn't your traditional, even you say you either attack over the Poggio and hang on down the end, or you attack, you know, in a bunch sprint. But what Stuyven did was somewhere in between. He attacked kind of off the descent of the Poggio, went off the front by himself. It looked, I mean, when I was watching it, I was like, he's never going to make it. And I felt sorry for him when Søren Krogh Andersen caught him. Watching it back, that definitely played to his advantage, because Krogh Andersen kind of comes up alongside him, gives Jasper Stuyven a bit of break from the wind, lets him hold his wheel for a bit. Stuyven kind of gets a bit more energy, and then he can kick at the end and go.
Yeah, he definitely owes Andersen a couple of beers there, I think. A couple of Peronis around in that region, I reckon. But, I mean, I don't know. With the calibre of sprinters that were in that chase group, obviously Ewan, who is arguably the fastest guy on the on two wheels at the moment, and Wout van Aert, who seems to pull out every bunch sprint he competes in at the moment as well. I'm not sure how much motivation there was for the other guys to chase.
Yeah, it was just, at the end of the day, what it came down to was just really intelligent racing. And I didn't see the bit where he said that he'd done it on instinct, but it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, he definitely did say that. He just said that it was all done on feel. He saw an opportunity and went for it, basically.
Tom, how much do you know about Jasper Stuyven?
I know, I reckon, two things about Jasper Stuyven. One being that he is now a winner of Milan San Remo, and the other being that he is called the Chocolatier and makes chocolate.
Wonderful. I mean, that is essentially all there is to know at the moment, but I have decided I'll give you a little fact file anyway. So Jasper Stuyven,
yes please,
he's 28 years old, he's from Leuven in Flanders. Do you know what Leuven is famous for?
Stella.
Perfect. Yeah, spot on. Yeah. Leuven is the place where they make Stella Artois. As a kid, Jasper Stuyven was really into his rollerblading. Apparently, he dedicated 2 years of his life to rollerblading, I think when he was like 6 or 7. Realized that wasn't for him, but he did like riding on wheels. So he went on to become the cyclocross champion of his local province. That is the province, the Flemish Brabant province. Mm-hmm. He then, in later years, won the mountain bike and time trial champion titles of that province. Then he did your kind of usual road cycling, work your way up through a number of local teams, and he signed for Trek in 2014. In 2015, Jasper Stuyven took his first and only Grand Tour victory in stage 8 of the Vuelta, and he actually won it with a broken scaphoid that he suffered earlier in the stage. Ooh. It was a bunch sprint that he won as well. So looking back at that, there are certainly some similarities between his San Remo win and the kick he had there. And back in 2015.
Yeah. Oh, that's nasty though.
Other than those, he has notable things on his palmares are Kerner Brussels Kerner and Omloop Het Nieuwsblad. Flandrian through and through in that sense. And
not both on this, not in the same year.
No,
one day after
years.
The other, was it? No, didn't do the double.
No, I think Kerner Brussels Kerner, he won it back in 2016 or 15 or something. It was a while back.
Okay.
And he won Omloop 2020, I think. But you've correctly identified that he comes from a chocolate making family, which again, on the commentary, I think Rob Hatch, as soon as Stuyven crossed the line first, dealt with it well, panicked and thought, oh my god, what do I know about this guy, and really went for the chocolate line. And it's so, watching it back is so funny, because I think he dubs him the chocolatier from Flanders. And if you go on Jasper Stuyven's Wikipedia page now, under nicknames, it says the Chocolatier from Flanders.
It's a very accurate name. He can't dispute it.
I love it. I decided I'd go to his family chocolate making website, stuyven.be. And alongside your usual kind of pralines, your marzipan chocolate covered things, they sell cycling themed chocolate.
Oh, right. I was going to say, because my experience of Belgian chocolates is that they come in quite often not cycling themed shapes, but you know, there's a very specific specialty that a lot of Belgian chocolatiers seem to have. Basically it's a load of erotic chocolate.
Right, well, I don't think the Stuyven stoop to those levels. They've got very classy chocolates. Alongside those ones, they've got like different multicolored mini bidons you can get, and mini Trek Segafredo jerseys, obviously not full size ones, they're going to be mini ones. They did a World Championships special edition for when Mads Pedersen won that last year. And they are now apparently working on a Milan San Remo special edition chocolate in honor of Jasper Stuyven's win.
Absolutely. Milk it as much as possible.
That wasn't the only racing. Trek Segafredo, obviously very successful in that race. Weren't expecting it. I think all of us were not expecting it. And shame on us for only focusing on the big guns. Jasper Stuyven has shown us that it's not just about them. At the Trofeo Binder, again, still in Italy, we saw Trek Segafredo come out on top again. Different racing tactics with this one, but the same sort of just powerful riding from them.
Yeah, and it's obviously come from a rider who we have actually spoken about quite a bit recently, Lisa Longo Borghini. And I think it's probably a lot to do with the fact that this early season program is really based in Italy and she's Italian. So she obviously gets all the attention, but it was a really gutsy ride from her in the Italian champions jersey to really just ride away from the field.
Yeah, sadly for us, she was a week or so late for our prediction of her winning Strada Bianchi. But she showed something that I think a lot of us have been thinking for a while is, how do you beat SD Works in these one-day races? And the answer, apparently, is to just go off the front with 26K to go before anyone can really have a chance about thinking about attacking and stay out by yourself.
Stick it, yeah. I mean, it's risky, but if you've got the individual talent to give it a go, then, yeah, well, she's shown it can be done. And there's surely other riders capable. I know, well, Van Vleuten, as we know, will not win a race now. She's at Movistar, but she's surely also got the legs to maybe try that.
I was really surprised watching the Trofeo Binder at kind of SD Works' absence from that race. I mean, they had some of their big riders in there. I think Mormon Passio was in there as well. And she was, I don't know if she was going for the win, but definitely going for a top 10. They obviously missed Elisa Longo Borghini's attack. And then they missed the chase group as well. And the chase group had a lot of big names in it. It's got Marianne Vos, who is arguably the greatest female cyclist of all time. Cecilia Tripp-Ludwig, Cassia Nuadoma, Mavi Garcia. And they didn't have anybody in that group placed to chase down Elisa Longo Borghini.
That is a strange one, tactically. I don't know if they thought maybe they had enough strength in their own numbers that they didn't need to chase with everyone else, but maybe it was just an off day. Maybe they got caught out at the back.
Well, this is the thing.
I don't really know.
Yeah, I Googled it and I thought, why were SD Works not there at the end? And all of the results came back showing that basically they've managed to save their PR by doing a 1-2 at another one-day race in Belgium on the same weekend. So they're plugging that one and not this one.
Okay, well, swings and roundabouts.
Tom, should we turn and focus on what we've got coming up? I think we're staying in, well, we're moving over to Belgium for a bit now.
We are. It's a Belgian program now, and this is where it gets good for me. Cobble Classics coming up. The Belgian ones probably only. The French ones are not looking good at the moment, are they?
So this is the thing. I mean, I don't really understand this. I mean, all of the other one-day races, even the really small ones, are doing fine. Is it because they're just concerned that too many people will go to the roadside? Or is it, it's the local cases, isn't it? The amount of local cases.
I think the situation in northern France is that bad at the moment.
That just having cyclists passing through could be really dangerous for them.
For everyone, yeah. I don't think they can guarantee the public safety at all. I read the other day that ICU beds are currently at 118% capacity or something, so they're all, it's not good.
Yeah.
So we'll concentrate on the Belgian ones, and as you know, on this podcast, how do we preview races now?
I think we do a quiz.
We do. So I have written for you a little quiz on Gent-Wevelgem, which is the first of a few coming up. It's the precursor the weekend before the Tour of Flanders, which we will talk about more next week.
Tom, I'll be honest with you before we start, I'm anxious about this one. I'm not the most clued in on Gent-Wevelgem. I know that it's a very windy race and that it has a number of cobbled sectors. And I know that Mads Pedersen won it last year. So if those questions, you know, if those are not the answers to the questions, then I'm at serious risk of embarrassing myself here.
Those are not any of the questions, but I think I have made this doable. It's a lot of multiple choice. It's a lot of, educated guesses.
Okay, go on then. Let's
might
learn
be
together.
The right answer. So, question one. Which American won the 2001 edition of the race?
Right. Oh, okay. We don't have multiple choice. Okay, right.
No. Sorry, no. This is not multiple choice. But
right.
I'll
well,
tell
2000
you now,
and, 2001.
It's not who you would immediately go to.
Right, okay. So I'd immediately obviously go to Lance because 2001 was his...
I don't even want to speak his name.
Right. I am going to guess TJ Van Garderen.
No. Bit too early for him, I think. It was George Hincapie.
Okay. Yeah, no, good one. Bit before my cycling time, that.
Yeah, well, it was because you asked me last week who was the only non-European winner of... who was the most recent non-European winner, because there were two Australians of Milan-San Remo, and George Hincapie is the only non-European winner of Gent-Wevelgem.
That's interesting. Did you notice
unless
as well...
Unless you count Jamaluddin Abdulyaparov, but the Soviet Union probably counts. I don't know where in the Soviet Union he was born.
Did you notice on the commentary that they were making quite a big thing about the Australians not having won since Simon Gerrans? Because obviously they had Michael Matthews and Caleb Ewan in the mix at the end. And I was like, well, any listeners of the TT podcast will know very well who the last non-European winner of that race was.
They have produced some really good riders recently, the Australians. They've really come to the fore. Rowan Dennis won stage at the Volta Catalunya today, didn't he?
Exactly. So he did.
Yeah. Anyway, question two. In the most recent edition, won by Mads Pedersen, which of these three did not finish in the top 10? Wout van Aert, Mathieu van der Poel, or Julian Alaphilippe?
Oh, okay. The answer, I think, is going to be Wout van Aert, because the only reason you would say this question is to get one up on me with your van der Poel being better than van Aert thing. Is that the right answer? I bet it's the right answer.
Then final answer?
Is Wout van Aert.
Julian Alaphilippe.
Ah, where did he come?
I don't know. I've only seen the top 10 and he wasn't in it.
To be fair, it's a tough race. And I think in really bad conditions, Alaphilippe struggles a bit because of his size.
So I don't know
if
Julian Alaphilippe was in the race. I don't know if it came after Flanders last year when he was obviously knocked off his bike as well.
Oh, no. Yeah, I think it did. That would make sense.
Yeah. But so anyway, the other two were in the top 10. Now we move away from the race a bit and onto a bit more just general Ghent knowledge.
Right. Okay. Go on.
Which former Tour de France winner was born in Ghent in 1980?
Former Tour de France winner born in Ghent in 1980. Belgian Tour de France winner.
I will give you a clue. This is a great question. He's not Belgian.
Oh, was it Bradley Wiggins?
It is Bradley Wiggins.
Yes. See, I knew he was born
Bradley
in
Wiggins was born in Ghent.
Yeah. Has a Belgian won the Tour de France since then?
No, probably not.
Oh, I'm going to look it up. I'm going to look it up very briefly.
Merckx or someone, I don't know.
Well, Merckx hadn't won it in the 90s, has he? Last time a Belgian won the Tour de France was 1976.
Eddie Merckx?
Lucien Van Impe. That's why I was stumped with that one. But hey, I got there.
Yeah, I was pleased with that question.
That's a very good question.
Which of these cities is Ghent twinned with?
Oh, God.
Leicester, Nottingham, or Derby?
Right, well, the Twin Cities ones is pure guesswork, isn't it? And those three cities, there's not really much.
I've chosen three that are right next to each other.
Yeah. Twinned with Ghent, I'm going to say Leicester.
Nottingham.
Right, great. Next question, please.
Now, final question. You've got one out of four so far, once you were given a hint for Bradley Wiggins.
Yeah.
Ghent is the third largest city in Belgium. Brussels is second. Which is first?
That would be Liège.
Antwerp.
Where does Liège come? Is Liège very big? My knowledge of Belgium is atrocious. I need to brush up on this.
I don't know. Liège is obviously in the French-speaking part of in Wallonia, not Flanders. And I think all the big places really are in Flanders. Mm-hmm. Kevin De Bruyne, also born in Ghent. That's the other thing I learned when I was going over the Gantoise trivia earlier.
The what? Gantoise?
Sorry, wait, no, Gantois. Someone from things from Ghent are called Gantoise in French.
Very nice.
I don't know what they're called in Flemish, Dutch.
So when the Riders take the start line at Ghent-Wevelgem this week, we'll be thinking of Bradley Wiggins. Well, I think we'll think of Bradley Wiggins anyway because of the news going on. But also Kevin De Bruyne.
Yeah, exactly. They won the Belgian League in 2015. I've got lots of Ghent trivia because there is absolutely nothing notable about Wevelgem at all, apart from the fact that this race finishes there.
Tom, where can people find us tweeting and posting various things about the races that are coming up?
They can find us, as always, at TTPDCST, TT Podcast, all the vowels taken out, on Twitter and Instagram.
Awesome. We will be back soon, hopefully talking about some monuments that have a bit more going on during the race and not just in the final 10 kilometers.
See everyone next week.
See you next week. Thanks for listening, everyone. Take care.